sexy, spooky bones.
Welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
John.
Hey. And welcome.
Hey.
And welcome to the show. This week, we will review Azrael. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts. And then we'll go to a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go back to TV Corner. We are reviewing a new TV show, Hysteria, Season 1, Episode 1.
Actually, it's spelled Hysteria.
Oh, excuse me. Hysteria!
Yeah, there's an exclamation mark in there. Hysteria!
Pardon my ignorance. But we've decided to change shows. And already feeling really positive about the change we made.
So much better.
Yes. Yeah. This is more, I think, in our wheelhouse.
There's metal. There's Satanists.
Like a
Julie Bowen.
I like the heightened, it's set in the 80s, right? But like there's like a heightened 80s feel to it. It doesn't feel like, yeah, it's not trying to get the era particularly like accurate or correct, but it's tries to be a little bit, has to have fun with it, with the time and the place. But some really cool, interesting things happen that I thought were like, because I couldn't really guess the mystery of this show. There's kind of like a mystery, right? Because there's like a couple of things going on.
Yeah, like the town sheriff is Bruce Campbell.
That's, yes.
Is that?
I mean, and essentially Hysteria is about a band of, actual band, a musical group of, like, I don't know, outcasts, misfits or whatever. They have a band and they live in a very suburban town. And this was like the late 80s. So there's like this satanic panic, right? And in the small town. And the TV show kind of kicks off with a teenage girl disappears and it's taken by two figures in masks.
And they take her boyfriend too?
I don't think they take. Did they take him? It's not explicitly said.
They did take him because later in the episode they find his dead body or like his clothes or something.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. And that's how the things kind of kicked off. I thought it had like great intro. Kind of had like Scream vibes. You know, the first Scream where like these two hooded figures are in the house and stuff, and it take a teenage girl running in the streets and stuff, and they do this really fun cutaway to another house and it's just some woman reading a book not paying attention to what's going outside her house. Really fun, like that to me is a good example of like the tone of the show. You know, it's like there is like a mystery, there is like horror element to it, but there's also, you know, there's also comedy in it. There's also some good comedy beats so far in the show.
I feel like it's borrowing from a lot of things, right? Like,
right.
Two of the big ones are what, Todd and the Book of Pure Evil, and then there was another show or movie that kind of dealt with a metal band full of like nerdy people.
Mm-hmm. Sort of. This is the opposite tonal wise than Stranger Things, right? Yes. Like you can easily kind of compare them both, but I think Stranger Things tries hard to get the period correctly. It's a little more grounded than this. This is a little bit more heightened 80s and stuff.
It's having fun with it,
right? And I guess, so the boy, essentially the lead here, the character, main lead, has a crush on a girl. Dylan has this crush on this girl, this blonde girl, and
one of the most popular girls of the school or whatever, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she says that she's into like metal bands or whatever. So he gets the idea of changing his band that's not particularly popular into like a satanic metal band. All the while there's like this kidnapping going on. There's like this, we see a little bit of like people in the town.
Shit.
Weird like shit's going on.
Insane, like earthquakes happen.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's really fun because there's like a duality, right? There's like, there's actual like creepy shit going on, but there's also that has quote unquote, like the show says, hysteria of like, they're scared that there's that Satan is somehow infiltrated their town and through music or through some other means and stuff. So I did like that it was like playing against each other.
And Julie Bowen's like losing her shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or potentially got possessed. I'm not sure.
Is she in the show?
She got possessed. Huh?
It's just based on the ending of this episode. Do you think she's in the show? I think she's not, right? She's dead.
No, she got up.
Did she?
Yeah.
After she was dropped?
She got like dragged out of the house, I think.
Mm.
Right? Like she got slammed on the coffee table and then she like awoke.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's possessed.
Mm-hmm. Really fun show.
And there's like a religious fanatic who keeps talking about her daughter, but I think her daughter's the one that got abducted at the beginning.
Right. Yes.
So, but she keeps making excuses for her at the school, but you don't know who she is until the end when her daughter like comes back crying.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I guess they released her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is like leaps and bounds, better than Tika.
I really liked it. I think it had a good, for a show that's an hour, I think it had a really good, like, good pace to it. Really interesting direction. And I think the story leads itself to a couple of things, right? There's no obvious direction as to what's going on. There's clearly some sort of, like, supernatural element to the show on top of the sort of, it smartly builds upon the sort of known hysteria of the late 80s, 90s about satanic music, Tipper Gore, this sort of censorship. So it's kind of like at the cusp of that, the tip of that, and then sort of dealing with like an actual like weird thing going on. And I'm not quite sure how the kidnapped girl in the beginning that we meet is tied into any of it. So I think they did a really good job of creating a good mysteries to continue watching the show while having really, you know, relatable, fun characters that the three leads, the three teenagers that we meet. Though I do not understand how he's like crazy over a blonde girl when he has like dark haired goth girl right there. that's the most unbelievable aspect of the show.
Clearly cares about him too. And
yeah. Right. Yeah. They're setting that up.
If it makes you feel better, he was born the year you graduated high school.
1985.
Yeah, but did you recognize that kid? The only reason I recognized him was because I had just seen this movie.
No, I didn't see this kid.
He is the main son from Krampus. He's the one that like, he saves the day in Krampus, but he doesn't.
Okay.
I want to say he's also the kid from Chef. That's what I'm looking at right now.
I remember him from Grey's Anatomy. No, I'm kidding. I don't have no idea.
Yeah. We should just start doing that. Like, actually, I remember him, obviously, from Countdown. He played Runner.
Yeah, he was a mean boy in Air Bud 5. Yeah.
Exactly.
Also directed by Jordan Vogt. Roberts. He did Skull Island. Yes. And he definitely has like a very, he's directed a lot of music videos, and he forever, since I started following him online and stuff, if he was familiar with his work, he's forever talked about doing Metal Gear Solid as a movie. He's tried so many times to make that video game into a movie, and I wish he would. It's great. So,
but they've already made Metal Gear Solid into a movie. It's called Escape from New York and Escape from LA.
You would think Carpenter would have sued the pants off him.
But Carpenter doesn't even own pants. So what does he know? No,
cargo shorts.
He can't be bothered to wear pants.
Yeah, because didn't he famously get that movie that totally ripped off the plot of Escape from New York? What is it? The prison movie with Guy Pearce?
Oh, shit. The space prison one, right?
Yes.
I haven't thought about that movie in a long time.
It never came out because he sued him. And he won.
No, I saw it. Yeah, because I was like, man, this is giving me like Carpenter vibes. I remember seeing it. Like, Guy Pearce played like a real like snarky, like whatever type of guy. And yeah, he's trying to save the president's daughter. Yeah,
it's literally the same plot. I don't know if he successfully got it all the copies taken down or whatever, but he did successfully sue and win. Well, give me your overall thoughts. About the show, first episode.
I watched this, and for beginning to end, was like, this is like one of those shows I'm so happy exists.
Okay.
Like, I was just, you know, because we do watch a lot of horror-themed things, and how do I put this? Because I don't want to offend people, but I guess that's all I do. I'm that guy on the show. I vibe with this more than I did with Chucky.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I see that, yeah. Yeah.
I think there was something about... I did enjoy Chucky, but there was something about the kids' characters. I just could not relate to them somehow. Like, they were, like...
Right.
Somehow...
Too gay.
No, I'm just kidding.
Their tits weren't big enough.
There weren't enough goth chicks in Chucky.
Yeah.
I think this one is just more of you can feel that they are outcasts. They aren't, you know, because they're also not trying to play that they're fucking outcasts, kind of like in Chucky.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where each of those kids are like, I'm weird because of this, I'm weird because of that. And this one, they're not trying to play like I'm weird. They're just like, I'm just me, and I guess nobody fucking likes me. Too bad.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, mm-hmm. There's something a little more relatable about the characters.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think they're much more likable.
And it's been a long time since I've seen
kids.
Bruce Campbell play a straight character.
Mm.
He's great.
Yeah. he basically had a cameo in this, but it looks like since he's like the sheriff of the town, he'll have more stuff. Considering. I'm assuming like all the supernatural stuff is gonna continue. Yeah, but I did really like it overall, and I like the. I kind of hope that they keep that. Really enjoyed like the kind of kinetic filmmaking in it and the heightenedness of it. Hopefully, they keep that keep it going in the show, each episode, because I'm enjoying that, and I think it's a solid mystery so far.
I think the only thing that I didn't really believe is, no offense to Nolan North, but Julie Bowen's like way too out of your league.
Julie Bowen, yeah, the dad. The dad's a little... he just... For a character who's nearly not there, he almost would have been inspired to cast somebody maybe a little odd looking or a little... I don't know. Done something different, because the guy's very just straight. He plays it very straight, you know.
Yeah.
Disapproving dad.
Which I think I feel like he got cast because he's like a prominent voice actor, right? He does a lot of DC voices. I think he's done.
No, I don't know.
Anyway, yeah, but I was just like, man, that's Julie Bowen, right? Like, we gave...
She's excellent, yeah.
Ty Burrell, what's his name? Shit, what the fuck's his
Ty name? Burrell, yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, perfect as a husband for her, right? Because he's, like, goofy and weird.
Yeah. And he was going to play Samus, right? Or, oh, yeah. Or whatever the fucking... His hair is going to have his power. He's going to have green hair. They're never going to do that. No. We're talking about that. Was it who? Edward Norton? No,
that was it.
No,
there was the Eric Bana one. What's his name directed it?
Ang Lee.
Ang Lee.
No, right? I thought he was the one. Oh, they're going to make me look it up. Maybe I'm confusing it with Green Lantern, or was it?
He played the boyfriend of Liv. What's her name? Liv Tyler in the Eric Bana one. I think.
No, I think it's the other one with Edward Norton.
Oh.
Ty.
Oh yeah, you're right. That's the one. Yeah, he gets pushed out the plane, right? And everybody was like, "Oh yay, Edward Norton's gonna die," and then he's Incredible. I'm just kidding, Edward Norton.
Yeah, he plays Leonard. Yeah, and the Incredible Hulk.
And that's a review.
Well, the Leonard character is interesting
because he has green hair.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, if you start your career being the love interest of Adam Sandler, right? No, just kidding.
Yeah, because, I mean, they brought back... they brought back Tim Blake Nelson, right?
Oh, that's right.
To play the The Master or some shit? I forgot the name of the character. It's the guy with
The leader.
The leader. He has a big fucking head or whatever. So, I don't know. Ty Burrell can play. It's time to put him in an action movie, Marvel.
And I'm just saying.
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing.
So we all want it, and we're all thirsty for it.
I don't know why you don't understand. Everybody loves Bryan Cranston and Ty Burrell, right? They're beloved. Even though Ty Burrell played the jerk in
Dawn of the Dead. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was fucking excellent in that, too.
Yeah, they're America's dads. Or whatever the fuck. Anyways, great show. We're going to continue with it. You want to move to our main review?
Yes.
All right, let's move over to our main review of Azrael. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Azrael, 5-word plot summary. Coming in at number 3. Lord of the Rings? Just kidding. Because they're little earth guys. They're orcs. No, they're not. I don't know what they are. I was like, this is Lord of the Rings. She's got to find something. I don't know.
See, this doesn't help your argument that you were just okay with those movies. John,
I did like them a lot. I saw them in theaters and I bought the movies.
I mean, the closest comparison would be with like the Uruk-hai, right? They're the ones that they grew in the ground.
That's why. And then there's like a little reveal at the end that I thought that's what it was until he kind of got like a better look at what the reveal is at the end. I'm like, oh, that's what it is. I was writing that plot summary when that was happening. I was like, I'm going to leave it because Rolando's going to enjoy this. No, I think I'll be honest. My beef with Lord of the Rings was like, I really liked it. Okay. This is going to be the same thing with Nightmare Before Christmas. I really fucking loved that movie when it came out. Saw it as a kid in theaters. And then somehow like a couple years later or a handful of years later, everybody's like just obsessively fucking fawning over it. And I'm like, I don't want to see this anymore. Because I don't know why I have issues with things that are popular.
Yeah.
I don't know why that's still a thing for me. Except for Chapel Roan. I fucking love Chapel Roan. Anyway.
Okay. Wasn't gay enough. Got it.
Just kiss Sam Frodo. What the fuck? All right. Coming in at number 2 for Asriel's 5-word plot summary. No planning will be needed.
That is, yeah.
And coming in at number one for Asriel, as John has mumble mouth for whatever fucking reason. We don't need Rosemary anymore.
Yeah. I think I got that one. Yeah. Rosemary's baby.
Yes.
There is a baby in this movie. No spoiler. That's not a spoiler.
I was also going to do like a First Omen joke, but I was like, man, we've been talking about First Omen so much lately. As I forced us to do right now.
Okay, cool. So guess here's a little trivia. You know how we didn't like Teacup? You stopped watching it?
Yes.
The creator of that directed this movie, E.L. Katz.
I feel like if he had made Teacup into a movie, it would probably wouldn't have been drawn out so fucking much, and probably would have been as like, because this one is way faster somehow. I mean, it's also
I feel like for a movie that had minimal dialogue, I was pretty well paced and was never really like bored. Yeah. I guess, even though like. I think by the end it gets a little too like revenge action-y for me, but it made sense for the overall plot of the story, except for that one weird scene, which I don't know if it's a spoiler or not, which I'll delay from mentioning, that I think doesn't work. I didn't get it, but kind of happens in the middle of the movie. Just I'll hint around it, like when she's found.
I'm gonna say, because I'm also like, it, this is gonna be the only person that fucking speaks in the entire movie, and he has no idea. I'm guessing this is like a village situation.
That's what I thought too. Yes, but I don't think it is. I think the intent is like it's like no, like there was a post-apocalyptic thing or whatever. People are living in the forest because there's like creatures and stuff around. And
I have a different theory, but yes.
Oh,
because that dude didn't seem to be concerned about that at all. The guy, and I'm gonna. This is where I'm making an educated guess.
Okay.
Don't come at me and say I'm racist against Estonians. I think he's Estonian.
Mm-hmm.
Only because the cinematographer had an ESC credit next to his name. The Estonian Society of Cinematographers.
Oh.
That's my guess. I don't know.
That's your guess, yeah. That's interesting. But he didn't write the movie. So, who wrote the movie? Simon Barrett. Didn't he write Scream... He wrote a Scream movie. I know that, right? Oh, he wrote The Guest. God, I love The Guest. That's such a great movie. Seance. I think we mentioned that last week, right? That he had written Seance.
Yes.
And The Guest.
And he also wrote Your Next. And have you seen Your Next?
No, I have not. That's with Samara Weaving. Yeah.
So it is... I think that's why I dug the whole revenge aspect of it at the end is because Ready or Not becomes like a huge revenge film, and it's a very like satisfying sort of revenge film. This one I'm not going to say is as satisfying because everything seems to incidentally work out every time.
Right.
Okay, yeah. But the same thing with like, you know, I like the John Wick movies, but a lot of those moments in John Wick are like, well... Luckily, this didn't happen because he would have died.
Right. And like at some point, they kind of stop caring about reality. Right. So it's like the John Wick movies aren't based in any type of reality. Right. Like it's just over the top action.
Yes.
So.
And I guess, yeah, you're right. This one, I mean. Realistically, at some point, somebody gets the shit beat out of them enough they don't keep coming back. But right. I have a theory about that too, kind of. I think it's not a coincidence that. And the thing is, like, I had the captions on when I saw this movie, so it, you know, you wouldn't know that Azrael
revealed more.
Yeah, like why it's called Azrael.
Yeah, I was not. I don't remember explicitly if they explained why it's called Azrael.
And I think maybe that's not really a spoiler, but it kind of ties everything together. But yeah, it's an interesting way to set up a movie when mm-hmm. nobody's talking. Only one person talks in this entire movie, and it's like a foreign. Even in the captions, it says foreign language because they didn't know what to say. And that's for like a very brief moment. Otherwise, nobody talks. I'm assuming everybody's tongues got cut out.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's like a very yeah, you're right. It's a very Walking Dead style camp in the middle of like the forest.
Or the road is also what I kind of got visually from this movie.
Right.
Yeah. Was it The Road? The Road. Yes, yes. With Viggo Mortensen and yeah, Cormac McCarthy book. I would say overall I liked it overall.
Yeah, right. It's not bad.
I think a movie that has ambition to like make a movie with no, you know, with handicapping itself on purpose so we can kind of tell story through action I think they executed that idea well, and it worked for the movie.
Yes.
And I think it's fairly enjoyable too, also on a horror movie, like monster movie, I guess, aspect of it, you know, like
yeah,
an action.
Interesting, because did you get, you know, there's like a lot of movies you can kind of relate this to, like The Descent, right? There's something kind of very Descent-y about these creatures, these cannibalistic, whatever.
Yes, the things that they
they're humanoid.
Are humanoid, yeah.
In fact, I thought they were just like people that were living underground and covered in mud. But then that proved to be not correct later.
Yeah. And I feel like it's one of those movies that I feel like any kind of questions you raise, it's like, it doesn't try to give you answers. It's just kind of mainly just
you're in this
sets up the world and we're following this character as she, you know, deals with each situation. Cause in the beginning of this movie, I guess she is with her lover or something, you know, I guess
from that show,
relationship. Oh yeah, that's right. And
what else they was get, in that he was somebody's friend.
He looked familiar, but I didn't. Yes, here I'm pulling it up as we speak too. He was in Candyman.
Yes. Oh, that's the one. I was gonna say he's like somebody's friend. Yeah, in Candyman. That's right.
And
but that's kind of all I remember him from, to be honest. Yeah,
I mean, he's a very minor character, and he's kind of like a plot device, kind of get the whole thing going, you know.
And you get the feeling that they both are on the run from these people already.
Yes.
So my guess is they ran away from this group, which is culty, right?
To say the least, yeah.
So yeah, right? Because it's still based on like a Jesus Christ religious values sort of deal, right? Like sort of Christian beliefs, it seems like.
Yeah.
Again, you're all kind of like getting all these from like context clues from like background scenery or like the way people interact with each other because nobody talks.
Mm-hmm.
They do like squealing things. Like I said, I'm pretty sure the idea is you just assume they got their tongues cut out or something. I'm not sure, but yeah.
I think you can almost, for instance, like if you were to set this in, say, the 1600s, right? You can do that too with this story, but setting it like
like there would only be one person that talks, and they'd be like, "You will not talk to anyone."
I know property law very well.
Even underground is my domain.
But yeah, he like, I feel like it's one of those stories that you can, it almost feels like this was like, this can easily set this like in the past or the future or present, or you know what I mean? Like you can kind of play with the idea, because it's pretty flexible with the way it, the story is told, you know? But yes, there, it did seem like they were this like devout, I don't know, like community or something, right? That prays to these creatures or like worships these creatures or tries to fend them off, kind of deal, you know? Like,
yeah, or like
lives in the woods with them.
They set up sacrifices and then they all turn around and go like, they go like that.
Yeah.
This isn't a spoiler. Like, they, so the cold open is like they catch, and then there's like random biblical references, maybe? Question mark?
Yes. Right? Yeah.
Because some of them I was like, I don't recognize this, but also I haven't fucking read the Bible in like 30 years or something, so. Sorry, everybody at home.
Right.
But they catch them and then they like tie Samara Weaving to a chair and then they're giving her up as a sacrifice to these things that pop out of the forest, like all like, I thought they were covered in mud, but I guess that's just the way their skin looks, right? And kind of reminiscent of the red and black creature from Insidious, except just more black, right?
That's exactly what I thought too, yes.
Which I thought was pretty cool. And while they're doing the they can't hear Samara Weaving breaking out of the fucking chair, and I was like, maybe if you guys didn't turn around and decide to look like idiots in the middle of the forest, you could have caught her. But, you know, I think the movie's about her, so sorry guys.
Right, yeah.
And I like how it sets up, like, it seems like those characters that are there at the beginning are like the main antagonists for the rest of the thing. Like, they each have like little mini moments where like, oh, they think they caught Samara Weaving. That might be a spoiler, but like they think they caught her, right? But they don't understand that Samara Weaving is the lead actress of the movie.
They think they're the leads in this like, movie, but no,
it doesn't matter how many times. did you want to? I'll make that joke when we go to spoilers. But there's like one thing where I'm like, oh, you think you're gonna do that? You think that's gonna stop her?
Yeah.
But yeah, what did you like? The pacing wasn't bad, right?
No, I thought the pacing was really good. Yeah, like a lot of, there's a lot of we're pretty much only with her through the movie, and there was a nice like pace to the action and to each scene and stuff. And when it needed to get gory and violent, I think it did effectively. I think overall it's a really effective movie. Like, I don't know if it like pushed it like past like over the top for me. Like, I think this is like, oh, this gotta go, loved it completely. But I thought it was a really well made executed movie. Yes.
Yeah, I feel what you mean. I'm probably on the same sort of vibe when it comes to that, because there's like, again, I did really enjoy it, and I could tell people, yeah, you should give it a watch. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would rewatch this. I'm not gonna say it's my favorite movie, but I would rewatch it. Be like, yeah, you should check it out, because, I will say again, it is very, I can't even say divisive. It's like Samara Weaving keeps getting caught and is able to get out of it.
I mean, yeah. It's like a video game, right? Yeah, like,
basically. In fact, like I said, I've been replaying Resident Evil 2, the remake.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm watching a survival horror game right now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I totally get that. And I think Samara Weaving's acting is really good in this movie. I thought she's a really compelling lead.
Yes.
I know that she's been like in Ready or Not, and she's been in a couple of other movies that I just, for whatever reason, haven't seen.
The Babysitter.
But Babysitter, I haven't seen that either. My only other point of reference, I believe, was the opening of Scream movie. I forgot which one. The last one, the right? Last it was the last one.
Yeah.
And so essentially, I think it's because it's the same guys, right? That producer, directors, and stuff. They're all kind of the Ready or Not movies. They got the Scream, the lad they directed or made the last couple of Scream movies.
Yeah, yes.
And so she's been a part of them. And so it's my only other reference for her. And yeah, I thought she was great in this.
Yeah, she was really good. She also did you watch the last Bill and Ted movie?
Oh yeah, yeah. I did.
She's one of the daughters, you know, like the Bill and Ted's kids.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah. I did not remember that, but yeah.
Yes, she was also in Squirrel Boys, the 2015 movie. No, I'm just kidding. We're just going to pretend that we're super... we've seen every single thing on Earth.
Yeah.
But the truth is, like, once we get off the air, like, we're forced to watch what we need to watch for the next week. And then we put on Blood Ride on repeat.
Again and again. Never off the ride.
Some people quote Anchorman. Some people quote SNL. Some people quote I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson. We quote Blood Ride.
To each other mostly. Nobody else gets it. It's a shame. Yeah. Do you have any other thoughts before we go to spoilers?
So I gotta say, camera work was adequate.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Wasn't trying to do anything insane. Color correction, I feel like that's kind of the director and the writer's thing, is always those sort of colors. It's always like sort of like red shades, like ambers and browns and stuff like that, because Ready or Not also had the same feel. It feels sort of like Victorian vampire somehow. I don't know if that makes sense, but
German expressionism.
Okay. My favorite German expressionist, Tim Burton.
For people don't know Tim Burton, he made the Alice in Wonderland movies.
I will say this also reminded me of In a Violent Nature. Something about like nobody talking, and then like, you know, it's very kind of quiet for a lot of the movie.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I felt like this proved my point. I don't think I'd be able to pronounce the composer's name, but they did a fucking excellent job. Toti Gunnarsson. Sure, I nailed it.
Yep, nailed it.
He's also a guy that was a... Well, I'm not sure what a music arranger does, but music arranged for Joker.
Yeah.
So I think he actually worked... Okay, so he was a music arranger for Joker, which means he worked under... And I'm not even going to try to fucking say her name, but I saw her live at the Disney Concert Hall, and she's probably one of the youngest, most successful composers.
Mm-hmm.
She's fucking excellent. So, like, I think I hear a lot of that in what he's doing. Like, yeah, he's learning from her.
Okay. Yeah.
He also did the Battlefield 2024 game. 2042, sorry.
Great. Yeah, these are great insights. Things that we don't normally touch upon that you noticed.
The sort of chalk stuff in the background, as far as like the production design.
Hmm.
It was very Midsommar, right? Like, who chalk colors in the back of a building? But I guess they made this church themselves.
Right.
In fact, is this a colony house or what is this?
Yeah, colony house. Yeah, I thought. Yeah, it's tough to do. Post-apocalyptic, you know, because like it needs to feel lived in, you know, like it needs to feel like the Earth's whatever the society's point has passed. And that's something that's hard to achieve, right? Like, especially if you're on a budget. So, but luckily they set it in the woods, and they just had to, you know, dirty up clothes and campsites, and
which is why I think that that one scene you're talking about that didn't make sense is
mm-hmm.
like, if we could get a translation of what the guy was saying, we'd probably get a lot more insight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that scene sticks out as like, it's not, doesn't make sense, especially since they don't elaborate on it.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Because then we're back, it's almost like this weird moment of like levity, right? And then we were soon right back into like the action, the horror of the movie. So, and it didn't land with me because it was so odd. Because I think the very next sequence, there's like an 80s song or something. It's like, oh, she's like fighting some guy. And yeah, she's like fighting some dude on the ground or whatever. And like, there's some 80s music playing over it, which is cool. But I didn't understand how we went from.
I think you're supposed to be.
Moment to moment.
You're supposed to be taking that the car was alive for a little bit longer. Like that kicked in and then it fades out a little bit. So it's just like the car finally died.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I have a theory about that.
Okay. This I actually do want to hear because I think it was probably the scene I had the most problems with. So, all right, let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No! Stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop, please. Stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into
spoilers. Spoilers. I think it is like a sort of cult, and I think they're trying to bring in the second coming of Christ is what the whole thing is.
Mm-hmm.
And they think that these things, whatever they are like angels. And I think that scene is Samara Weaving, and I think I forgot what his name is, the guy from Misfits. Which again, if nobody's seen this like English show that came out, when was that, like 2010 or something? First two seasons are fucking awesome. I think they escaped from this like cult thing that was happening over there, and I think maybe they were kind of born and raised through this thing. I think you're supposed to assume that they're a lot younger than we know how old they are, but they're supposed to be younger than that. And that's why when Samara Weaving gets picked up and is like, no, get in, like, they understand what cars are, they understand what like guns are, but she seemed a little confused about the lights, right? Because they were electric. And then when she got in the car and the song was playing and the guy was like, you know, bobbing his head, and she was like, I don't know what that is, and she was doing it awkwardly, like, oh, interesting. It's because she doesn't understand the outside world. And to really tie everything together, if you have the captions on, you would know that Samara Weaving is Azrael. The movie is called Azrael because her name is Azrael, which biblically is the angel of death.
That tracks.
Which is probably why she never died, because there's so many moments like, why isn't she dead?
So she went full Rambo.
Yeah.
At the end. Yeah, fucking murking people left and right. But so you're saying
she chopped dude's head off. That's a second decapitation of the movie too, by the
way. Yeah.
The first one is a little gruesome, but
yeah, she's. Yeah, those creatures or whatever get pull it off.
Like basically right bite after the dude's neck off until they can pull the spine out too, yeah. It's like I've seen Predator, so, whatever.
So do you think that the guy in the truck who speaks in this movie is just like, do you think this is set in our time? Is that really post-apocalyptic?
I think it's present day.
The villaging?
I feel like it's like a present day thing. Yeah, very The Village. Because he's able to talk, right? And he's just like, what's wrong? It almost seemed like he was like, what's wrong with you? Like, what's going on? He was just confused about what was going on outside. He was like, what the fuck? He was like, all right,
right.
You can just go. I'll take you wherever I'm going. And then wasn't expecting people were hunting her.
Yeah. I think for me personally, I don't like that scene. I didn't like it in the movie because I think it draws away the focus of the story a bit. Like,
well, here's the thing. I think what that was trying to set up is these people have been out here trying to appease what they thought were like, this is all speculation too, I could be completely wrong, that they were trying to appease these angels. And then that's why at the very end, when you find out that the one lady who's pregnant that they've been trying to protect, which by the way, she had the most trouble fighting. I'm like, she's fucking knocked up. Like, what are you doing?
She's like the final boss and shit.
Because you remember that there was like a moment where Samara Weaving was going to go and kill her, but she's able to like knock out Samara Weaving because Samara Weaving keeps like making poor decisions. And Samara Weaving like had cut, or Ezra had cut that lady's belly by accident with her fingers. And then they try to bury her and put her in that hole, which, oh man,
Did you get claustrophobic?
Yeah, I fucking hate scenes like that. But
they got claustrophobic.
They worked very well.
Yes. I definitely did.
It reminded me of that the Cabinet of Curiosities fucking episode where with the rats, where the guy's trying to like, they're the grave robbers, right? And the rats
pulling,
and then they find out there's a human rat.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so there's like a tunnel dug under there, and this thing is trying to grab, or is going to attack Samara Weaving, but then smells her hand where she had cut the baby, and or the belly, I guess. And the thing was like, nah, you chill, and went out, and she like fucking superhuman busted out of being buried alive.
So do you think he just stayed in the cave and like she awkwardly like shimmied her way like past him, or do you think he left hole?
No, like, I think like she knocked her way out of that same spot because she just had to like casually walk over.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's a little funny. That's all.
I'm like, there's a lot of moments where I'm like, there's no way, like this is impossible, but I understand it's a movie. But then her being Azrael, and the only way you know that is with captions, it makes me think like, she was always destined to be the person that there's a child born at the end. She was always destined to be the caretaker of this child.
What's the religious background of that?
So Azrael is the angel of death, and the only one that was able to stand up to some other couple of angels or something like that. And, kind of incidentally created humanity or something like that, like had influence in doing that. So I think this is the opposite of that, in introducing hell back on Earth.
Okay, that tracks. Yeah, because it's clear that the baby that she had was one of them,
right, or something like that. Like Beelzebub sort of Baphomet.
Yes. Yeah. Like, so something they worshipped. Yes. Those creatures or whatever that are in the woods. Because there's a lot of them, apparently.
Because I think that this cult or whatever in the forest, I think that they were... Clearly, this lady gave herself up to one of these things and got pregnant. And I think they assume that these are angels and they were giving birth to Jesus again, like the second coming of Christ, but it wasn't. It was like the exact opposite.
The opposite of it, yeah. Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And then that's also why, like, when you see the chalk drawings, you assume it's supposed to be that lady with the baby of whatever that thing is.
It's her.
But yeah, it like clearly looks exactly like her, even with the stained glass window on the top and all that. And then she smiles because I think she wanted these things too, or I don't know. I feel like
maybe she. Well, I mean, it's kind of left like maybe she killed the baby, maybe she didn't. That's the sense I got, that like that she had the.
Because she starts like smiling right before like
it comes up. And we could assume. I mean, I assume that she'll probably kill the baby, right? Because she doesn't want to. Like continue living this way or be this way, right? I mean, we're not really given a large sense of what she wants in this movie, aside from the her partner
at the end, right?
Yeah. Aside from like getting her partner back and everything, that's like her only motivation, because there's like a flashback to them, you know, meeting and kissing in the woods and stuff.
Yes.
So I think that's a great read in the beginning, because I didn't catch that. Was that Ezra and her partner were
fleeing these people?
Yeah, they were not. I thought they were scared of the monster, but they're actually scared of the thing that they were fleeing, the community or whatever.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
There's also reason to suspect that they, some of the younger looking people there are attempts at making another Jesus, right?
Hmm.
I mean, that's just me, you know, really going on a limb and guessing. And I want to say that Azrael was one of those attempts.
Her?
Yes.
Hmm.
That's why I think that it checks that she's the angel of death, even though she's unaware of it.
Hmm. Unless she was always going to be, you know, was it? Would you say she was always going to be like the destroyer of this community?
I want to say she was always destined to be the destroyer of humanity.
Hmm.
Because, I mean, aside from like she did, yeah, she started murking fools left and right pretty quickly.
Yeah. Like she knew her way around guns and swords and machetes and kinds of stuff.
Her only folly was her, like, just, she doesn't understand the double tap concept, right? She's just like, oh, this person looks dead and walks away. I'm like, no. Because there's like too many moments where, like, I'm like, don't get frustrated. It's a fucking movie. Like, you do this every single movie. Like, why would they make that decision? Well, because then the movie wouldn't movie. Yeah. So yeah, that's my take on what Azrael was supposed to mean. I think I enjoyed the movie, but then I decided I really liked it because of that ending.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a little too, I don't think I quite vibed with its arty take on using religion and metaphors and these quotes throughout the movie. A little too self-serious for my taste.
Oh, that, you know? Yeah, that shit I could have done with that, to be quite honest. It, like, every time it happened, I'm like, what's going on? Oh, yeah, I forgot this was a
thing. Yeah, do I have to read all that?
Constantly kept forgetting that was a thing. And then it would pop up, I'm like, ah, shit, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah,
quote,
I just...
quote-unquote chapters, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, I think those are things that I didn't, like, quite find as compelling, but I can definitely appreciate the filmmaking and, like, the direction and then the great horror and designs of these monsters as well. Like, they're pretty cool, really interesting, terrifying, you know, especially that one sequence where, like you said, like, with, for me, the one sequence I enjoyed a lot was the one in the hole, the cave or whatever. It's literally a dugout hole. Like, cave is generous. Call it a cave. It actually made me very anxious like that. So, because it was just too much, you know, it was just like too, I could feel myself suffocated there, which doesn't normally happen to me. So yeah. Success on that part.
And also say, like, you said you haven't seen Ready or Not, right?
Mm-mm.
So, I mean, it's kind of almost the same concept. It's Samara Weaving, but I mean, people are talking, she gets suckered into, like, I forgot what the real setup was, but she goes to this, like, fancy Victorian house, and it's like present day, and she doesn't understand that this entire family is being really, really nice to her, but because they're gonna sacrifice her, like, she needs to die by the end of the night because there's a game they play.
Mm-hmm.
Where it lets you can kill the person first, but they did not expect her to go Rambo in that movie too, and she fucks everybody up.
That almost sounds like that vampire movie one we almost reviewed, right?
When we saw that movie, that's exactly what I thought. I was like, this, it has Ready or Not all over it.
Yeah, same plot. Okay, cool. Do you have any other thoughts before you rate the movie?
Other than, I don't understand why Samara Weaving doesn't get more roles like this. I like everybody's like, Bill Skarsgård's our new horror hero. I'm like, Samara Weaving's been my fucking horror hero for like the past decade.
Yeah. Yeah, she doesn't quite, maybe she doesn't want to be in Hollywood movies, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Possibly.
Timothy Chalamet's love interest or something.
Or maybe she's also trying to make her own way, I think. Famously, her uncle is Hugo Weaving, but she's like, he's never helped me. Like, he's my uncle, I love him. But, like, that's not how this works for us.
Is she waiting for her own... So what you're saying is she's waiting for her own Lord of the Rings thing, right? Like, Simillion or...
That's why I was hoping the Babysitter series would take off more, because she's fucking fantastic in that.
They made a couple sequels already, right?
Just Ryan? One. Yeah, there's a Babysitter 2. And it's really good.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, I would say I'm a fan. I'm a fan of hers. I think she's really good in this movie. So... okay, cool. You ready to rate it?
Yes.
John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones.
Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give Asriel 6.5 sexy spooky bones.
Cool, interesting. I was gonna do 7 because I felt like 6 was a little too low, but 7 feels like that's like my go-to. Like, it's interesting. I didn't love it, but it's interesting.
That's why I liked it. That's why I do 0.5. Because you can round that up, but it's still 0.5.
0.5, yeah. So we're almost the same score.
Yeah.
More or less. Very cool. All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.